jai. Vrindavan dhamma ki jai. Mathura dhamma ki jai. Navadvipa Mayapur dhamma ki jai. Jagannath Puri dhamma ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasai Bhujale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharani. Nirvasesha Srinivadi Paskacha Desha Charani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Utama Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Bikam Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadhudutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpa Chupascha Kipasana Devatam Chichanam Pavanevya Vajra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's April 2nd, 2019, in New Govardhan, Australia. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev, Text 29. Dharmam pravadatastasya sakala pratyupashtita yo yoginas chanda mrityor vanchitas tutarayana. Dharmam, occupational duties. Pravadataha, while describing. Tasya, his. Saha, that. Kalaha, time. Pratyupashtitaha, exactly appeared. Yaha, that is. Yoginaha, for the mystics. Chandra Mityaho, of one who dies according to one's own selection of time. Vanchitaha is desired by, to, but, Udarayanaha, the period when the sun runs on the northern horizon. Srila Prabhupada's translation. While Bhishma Deva was describing occupational duties, the sun's course ran into the northern hemisphere. This period is desired by mystics who die at their own will. Prabhupada's purport. The perfect yogis or mystics can leave the material body at their own sweet will at a suitable time and go to a suitable planet desired by them. In the Bhagavad Gita, 8:24, it is said that self-realized souls who have exactly identified themselves with the interest of the Supreme Lord can generally leave the material body during the time of the fire god's effulgence and when the sun is in the northern horizon and thus achieve the transcendental sky. In the Vedas, these times are considered auspicious for quitting the body and they are taken advantage of by the expert mystics who have perfected the system. Perfection of yoga means attainment of such supernatural states as to be able to leave the material body as desired. Yogis can also reach any planet within no time without a material vehicle. The yogis can reach the highest planetary system within a very short time, and this is impossible for the materialist. Even attempting to reach the highest planet will take millions of years at a speed of millions of miles per hour. This is a different science, and Bhishma Dev knew well how to utilize it. He was just waiting for the suitable moment to quit his material body, and the golden opportunity arrived when he was instructing his noble grandsons, the Pandavas. He thus prepared himself to quit his body before the exalted Lord Sri Krishna, the pious Pandavas, and the great sages headed by Bhagavan Vyasa, etc., all great souls. Dharmam pravadatastasya sakala pratipastitaha yo yoginas chanda mityur vanchitas. While Bhishma Deva was thus describing occupational duties, the sun's course ran into the northern hemisphere. This period is desired by mystics who die at their will. So this is an interesting explanation, and Prabhupada refers to the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita about time. That there are certain times that if you die at those times, that your path to the higher planets or your path even to the spiritual world is expedited or facilitated. And if you die at other times, it's much more difficult. Of course, Prabhupada says in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that those in bhakti yoga who aren't practicing the mystic process, the Ashtanga yoga process, don't have to be concerned if they die even in an accident. That Krishna is protecting their transit to the spiritual world. So in one sense you could say, well, why do we have to be concerned about this at all? Why is there this kind of instruction? What does it have to do with us? We just chant Hare Krishna and we depend on Lord Chaitanya, we depend on Krishna and Srila Prabhupada to take us where they want us to go, to take us back to Godhead or to take us to some other realm for service. And that's it, you know, why bother about time? But we find that even for us, there is a question of suitable times and unsuitable times. It's not that anything should or could be done at any time. I find it fascinating that in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna describes charity in the modes of nature, one of the things that pushes charity from the mode of passion to the mode of ignorance is giving charity at the wrong time. So there is a consideration of time, even in terms of the modes of material nature. And I think we all have experience that timing is important, isn't it? When you ask somebody a difficult question, it can make a big difference as to what kind of answer you get. Timing is certainly important if you're going to drive somewhere in a place where there's traffic jams. How expeditiously you're going to get to your destination. We know there's a whole Vedic science of muhurta, picking the right time to start something. And we in the Krishna consciousness movement are told that we should wake up early in the morning and do our sadhana early in the morning because that's an auspicious time. We have certain times to do the deity worship. We have certain times to chant our Gayatri mantra. So we do have some consideration of time. It's not just irrelevant. We just say, well, I'm in bhakti yoga, therefore I can do anything at any time and it doesn't matter. And of course, those of you who read Jayadvaita Swami's book, Vanity Karma on Ecclesiastes, and there's that famous section from Ecclesiastes, that there's a time for everything. There's a time to plant, there's a time to harvest, there's a time to make war, there's a time to make peace, and so forth. The whole system of varna and ashram is very highly dependent on time. Basically, all of ashram dharma is almost entirely based on time, with some exceptions for particular mentality. But otherwise, ashram is according to time. From this age to this age, you're in this ashram. From this age to this age, you're in this ashram. Like that. So we do have these considerations of time, which is very interesting because time is the first aspect of creation of the material world. In the spiritual world, is there time?
Yes, but it's
different. Okay, so more thoughts. That's a nice general answer. Yes?
It's inconspicuous by its absence.
It's conspicuous by its absence. You notice that it's not there. I assume, especially if you're coming from here. The influence is different. By the way, even people who have near-death experiences often say time is conspicuous by its absence. Yes?
Rama Samhita describes that the spiritual world is eternally present.
Yes.
The real world is past and future.
Okay, so the Rama Samhita, that the spiritual world is always in the present, and the material world we have past and future. Any other thoughts on the difference between the spiritual world and material world in terms of time?
Spiritual world, it serves past time.
There's some sort of element of time that's serving the past.
Past, past, the last.
That it's time for lunch, yes. Well, let's look first at time in the spiritual world. So, we know in the spiritual world, we know from reading in the Upadeshamrita, the Nectar of Instruction, that there's the Astakalila Lila. There's the eightfold daily pastimes. Now, as a kind of side note, I find it interesting that in the Upadeshamrita, Srila Prabhupada tells us that we should meditate on Krishna according to the eightfold pastimes. But there's no place in Prabhupada's books where he delineates them specifically. Never. I mean, there is some indication in Chaitanya Charitamrita with Srivas Thakur, whose appearance day we just celebrated, that when he was having a verbal interchange with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that they started talking about the Astakalila Lila. But again, there's not any one place where Prabhupada discusses this. So in order to meditate on the Astakalila Lila, we have to go to the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the books of our acharyas, Kavi Karnapur, and the Goswamis. Interestingly enough, Bhaktivinoda Thakur correlates the Astakalila Lila with what in Bhajana Rahasya? Good guess. Wrong book. Right author, excellent guess, wrong book. Who here has been to Bhaktivedanta Manor in London? Anybody here to Bhaktivedanta Manor in London? All right, there's a George Harrison garden there. And that George Harrison garden is done according to Bhaktivinoda's Vajana Rahasya, which took me like 3 visits to it before I figured that out. And then I went, whoa. I went up to Gauri Prabhu. I said, you actually made a public garden according to Bhaktivinoda's Vajana Rahasya. It's like, so. In Bhaktivinoda's Bhajana Rahasya, he correlates 3 things: the Hare Krishna mantra, the Shikshastika, and the Astakalila Lila. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur breaks the Hare Krishna mantra up into groups of 2, just like we have on that board. So he breaks up Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, like that. Groups of 2 words. And for each group of 2 words, he correlates that to a verse of the Shikshastika. So the first 2 groups is for the first verse of the Shikshastika, etc. Oh, and another thing he correlates it to. He also correlates it to Shraddha to Prema. So Bhaktivinoda is correlating the Hare Krishna mantra, the Shikshastika, faith to pure love of God, Shraddha to Prema, and the Astakalila Lila. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the first 2 words of the mantra correspond to the early morning pastimes of the Lord, very, very early in the morning. About the same time we're getting up in the morning, probably a little earlier than most of us are getting up. And what's Krishna doing then? Huh? Not, well, he does go home during that time. So, but first, before he goes home, he...
He's in the forest with the gopis.
He's in the forest with the gopis, and he gets woken up in the forest with the gopis. Who wakes him up?
Parrots.
Parrots. And monkeys. So he gets woken up in the forest, and he goes home. When he goes home, he gets into bed, and then he gets woken up again by Mother Yasoda. Okay, so that's Hare Krishna. And what's the next Hare Krishna? That's the next time of the day. What would that be?
Bathing, dressing.
Bathing, dressing, yes. Having breakfast, milking the cows. So that's when Krishna gets up. He goes and milks the cows. He wrestles with the cowherd boys. Has a bath, he takes breakfast. Okay, then, Krishna, Krishna. What's Krishna doing then?
Takes the cows to the forest.
Takes the cows to the forest, and he goes with the? With the cowherd boys. And they're all playing games with the cows in the forest. And they're probably also killing a demon. Prabhupada, there's one place where Prabhupada said that when we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, we can remember how Krishna was killing a demon and the cowherd boys were encouraging him with claps. He says, what is the use of reading Krishna book if you don't remember these pastimes when you're chanting Hare Krishna? He said, then your chanting is not, what does he say, it's negligent. Okay, then Hare Hare. What time of the day is that?
Midday.
It's the midday pastimes. And then what's Krishna doing?
Having lunch.
He has lunch. Where does he have lunch? in the forest. And who's he eating lunch with?
Cowherd girls.
With the cowherd girls, with Radharani, yes. And what else are they doing at midday? Huh? Oh, they're definitely singing. But I think Krishna's singing always. He's always singing something. Prabhupada says in Krishna book, the whole world is full of Krishna singing. But it's appreciated differently depending on our consciousness. What else is Krishna doing in midday? Huh? He does have a little nap during midday. Yes, indeed. He also sometimes has a nap after breakfast. Where does he often go swimming at midday? Not usually midday for Yamuna. Radhakund. And other various kunds. And he and the gopis are playing games. You can see at Shamakund, there's a platform near the Chaitanya Baitak. It's supposed to be where Radha and Krishna are playing games. And there's also the gopis steal Krishna's flute often at midday. Sometimes they play holy pastimes. And they go through what forests in Vrindavan in the midday pastimes? Go through the six seasonal forests, which we'll talk about in a minute, related to this material world. So what are the seasonal forests in the spiritual world?
There's one spring forest, one autumn forest.
Spring, autumn, yes?
There's also a jeweled one.
Well, there's spring, summer, winter, fall. That's pretty easy. And then we have two more. Misty and rainy. And then there's one forest where they're all together. So I don't know, where's that? There was one girl here, I don't see her anymore, who's from the Big Island of Hawaii. I was talking about Pele the other day as far as living mountains. But also on the Big Island of Hawaii, it's a very small island. It's called the Big Island because it's the biggest of the islands. But it's quite small. You can drive all the way around the island in 4 hours, and you can drive across the island in an hour and a half. But that island has 30 climate zones. It has all but two climate zones that are present anywhere on the planet. There's only two climate zones on the whole planet that are not present on that big island of Hawaii. And you just go from one, as you drive over the island and around the island, you're going from one climate zone to the other. So in the spiritual world, Krishna goes from one forest to the other, and they all have different flowers and different temperatures and, you know, different creatures and like that. Okay, so then on the end of that time, of course, they do some worship of the sun. Then we have Hare Rama. Then what happens at that time of the day? That's again with the cowherd boys. And what's Krishna doing now with the cows and the cowherd boys?
Bring them home.
He's bringing them home. And again, they're playing some games, and maybe even they kill a demon then. They usually kills a demon before lunch. That's the signal for the lunch break. You know, they're playing, and then Prabhupada said they kill it. Krishna kills a demon, and then everybody goes, you know, I'm kind of hungry after that demon killing. So yes, so with the Hari Rama, they're going home. And then what about the next Hari Rama?
Bathing,
milking the cows. Having dinner. And then Rama Rama. Well, the gopis are definitely doing that. The gopis are getting ready to meet Krishna out in the forest. And Krishna's going for entertainment. Just like so many people in this world in the evening, you know, they just sit down and they watch some entertainment. So Krishna also does that. Generally it's just the guys. They get really wild too. I think it's in it's either in Nandavrindavan Champu or Gopal Champu, how the cowherd men and the boys start whooping, woo, woo, you know, making all these noises like males make. I'm not very good at that. Sorry, I have the wrong body. So they're making all these noises, and Nandavraj has to tell them to calm down. He even has to ask his constables to tell everybody to calm down. So they're watching different dramas, and what kind of dramas are they watching? About what? Maybe about killing some demons, sure, about Krishna killing demons.
Different
incarnations. And different devotees. So they're watching a drama about Dhruva Maharaj, and a drama about Nasingadeva, and so forth. And jugglers, and magicians, and Just like Indrajumna Swami has on the Polish tour, right? So Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys and the cowherd men, they're kind of watching this like their own little Polish tour. And then Krishna goes to sleep, and then the last Hare Hare. Yes, so this is Krishna sneaks out of bed and he goes to the forest, and this is when what Leela takes place? The Rasalila. So we have these different times of the day and different activities at different times of the day. So we could say in the spiritual world there's time. Also, Gopakumar in Briya Bhagavatamrita says that in the spiritual world, sometimes Krishna goes to Mathura and then comes back. And he said, when he comes back, you forget that he's ever gone. But then he goes again. Right? And when he comes back, you like think, oh, that was some kind of dream that I had. So there's something like that also happening. But yet there's no past and future, and everything is eternal, and it's always the present. Everything is eternal, and it's always the present, and there's no past and future, yet there's some sort of sequence of events. How that goes together, I have no idea. As we say in America, that's above my pay grade. Do you understand that expression? So, your pay grade, it's how much you get paid in your work. So the pay grade, a higher pay grade means people who are above you in the business. Like if you're just, you know, a clerk, so the CEO has a higher pay grade than you. So if you say something's above my pay grade, that means that's the province of people who are more qualified than myself. So I don't know what that means. Does that mean all the Astika Lila Lila are going on simultaneously? Does that mean everything is happening eternally simultaneously? I have no idea. But there's some sort of time, there's some kind of sequence, and there's different things that happen at different times. Krishna also chooses different times. And of course, when Krishna has his pastimes on a material planet, when it comes to autumn, he says, oh, this is a good time. It's the autumn, there's a full moon. I'm going to go dancing with my girls. This is the right time for it. So this is quite interesting that in the spiritual world where there's no time, as I said, even people who have out-of-body near-death experiences, many of them say, there was no time. And certainly they weren't in the spiritual world. But many of them report, they'll say, there wasn't any sense of time, had a sense of timelessness, that it was conspicuous by its absence. Now then there's time here in this world. So time is the first part of creation of this world. It's the very, very first thing that happens in the creation of a world of illusion. That Mahavishnu looks at the pradhan, looks at the undifferentiated material energy, and that glance of his is time. That glance of his is also what personality? Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva. And in fact, Prabhupada says that when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi, time I am, he's referring to Lord Shiva. He's referring to his manifestation as Lord Shiva. So what happens because of time? Because of past, present, and future, we can have this illusion that I'm the doer. I do something, and because I do something, something happens. So time sets up the whole material illusion that I'm the enjoyer, and I'm the doer, and everything I'm doing here is so important. It's an intrinsic part of that illusion, and we don't have time at all. That's an interesting statement in and of itself. But because of when this class ends, there's no possibility of talking about the nature of time. But there was an article written by Mathurish Das in Back to Godhead, two articles he wrote about the nature of time. And I refer you to godankrishna.com and read his incredible, amazing articles about the nature of time. One of the points he makes that I think is fascinating is that we don't have any way of perceiving time. All the other elements, like space, we can perceive through hearing. Yes, fire, radiant energy, we perceive through seeing. Air, we perceive through touch. Earth, we perceive through smell. But we have no way of perceiving time. And there's no scientist that has any idea what time actually is. You know, what we define as time is the movements of different objects in relationship to each other. and some sort of measurement of things falling apart. So we measure time by how things degrade, how they rot, right? Including our own bodies. Sorry about that. Okay. You know, you get a banana and you can understand time by how it rots. And you can understand time by the movements of the sun in relationship to the earth and so forth. But we can't really perceive time directly, and nobody really knows what it is. So in this material world, we also have different times for different things. So we have, of course, the four yugas. So the original yuga, the Satya Yuga, that's for jivas who are most qualified to be human beings. Because everybody has to get a chance to be a human being. If you don't get a chance to be a human being, you have no chance of liberation. So if you just have to be an insect and a lizard, you know, and a frog and a monkey, you're never going to get out of this world. So everybody's got to get a chance to become a human being. But not everybody's equally qualified to be a human being. Have you kind of noticed that? Like just sort of looking around? That you look at some people going, you know, they're like barely human. And other people are almost demigod-like. So the souls who are qualified to be human beings but are practically on the level of demigods, they get to be human beings in Satya Yuga. In the beginning of Satya Yuga, there's not even varna and ashram. You don't have to do any livelihood. Your fruit just grows on the trees. Your grains just grow in the fields. The jewels just pop out of the earth. It's always warm, always perfect temperature. You don't need much of a shelter, and you can just meditate all the time. So just imagine how qualified you are. Okay? And as Satya Yuga progresses, we have to have the different varnas. People need a way of having a livelihood. Prithvi Maharaj then gradually establishes villages and towns and cities and governments. And we have different processes according to the different yugas that are perfectly suited for the people in that yuga. And if you try to do a process just like, you know, meditation is done in Satya Yuga. So we still have people trying to do meditational yoga. But I don't know if you're aware of this, but a lot of people who try to do meditational yoga actually mess up both their subtle and gross body. You guys aware of that? That you can really damage your subtle and gross body if you're unqualified to do a sangha yoga. You should be aware of that. But like there's some people who can awaken someone else's kundalini. You've heard about this? And then it just causes havoc. I spoke to one very accomplished holistic yogi who told me that having an awakened kundalini in an unqualified person is like giving a chainsaw to a three-year-old. And it's a kind of a well-known secret among yoga teachers that some people become psychotic if they take up these processes of meditation and yoga when they're not qualified. You know, they'll have this Buddhist Vipassana 10-day meditation, and people go there who, you know, right before that were drinking beer and eating beef. And they get some far-out realization and they actually go crazy. There was an interesting article in the New York Times about this phenomenon. So different types of yoga, different types of processes for enlightenment are suitable for different times. And then, of course, we have our day and night, right? And the modes of nature. So the reason we're advised to do the bulk of our sadhana early in the morning is that according to Ayurveda, then all the modes are in equilibrium. And then they go into the mode of goodness. And when the sun rises, the mode of passion becomes active. That's why at about 7 o'clock, you start feeling like you want to do things, right? I want to get something done, I want to get something done. It's hard to just sit and chant. And then in the evening, the mode of ignorance kicks in. That's when people go to bars, right, and strip clubs, and that's when the thieves become particularly active. You know, if you go to cities like New York or London, then you see that people who are doing mode of ignorance activities, they're doing it at night. And it's interesting, they say those are cities that never sleep. But when you get it from a Maharaji, they won't want to sleep. They can't function then. That's when the mode of goodness is active, and people who are very much in the mode of ignorance, it doesn't resonate with them. The atmosphere doesn't work with their mentality, and so they have to sleep. Right, if you walk to Mangalartik then, the only people you see on the street are the intoxicated people going home and the sex workers going home, but the city's basically dead. And then when the mode of passion becomes active, everybody wakes up. So you have this little time in the mode of goodness when these cities sleep. Except for Barcelona. It's the only exception I've seen where they just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going. They push themselves even to be drinking and so forth when the mode of goodness is active. And this is just like if you want to drive somewhere. If you go somewhere when the roads are empty, you can go faster, right? If you go somewhere during the traffic jam, it's more slow. And we have also known certain times of day and certain days, like we just had Ekadasi. So on Ekadasi, our spiritual life is facilitated. The same activities done on Ekadasi take you faster. Just as the same way, driving a car, when there's no other cars on the road, you get to your destination faster. And the same is true for different auspicious days. Maybe you could take them a little bit further away from the temple. Thank you. So we have Ekadasis, we have auspicious days, we have the time early in the morning. Now, does that mean you can't chant Hare Krishna at 10 o'clock at night? Of course you can chant Hare Krishna at 10 o'clock at night. You can chant Hare Krishna all the time. You can always remember Krishna and never forget him. It's not that, you know. But I remember once we were doing a Japa retreat with Satchinanda Maharaj. It was a 64-round day, and we started the bulk of our 64 rounds from 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon. And he said, I don't know if I should tell you this, but this is the worst time of the day to be sitting down trying to chant japa. This is when the mode of passion is most active. Then, of course, we have our Gayatri mantras that we chant at the sanjas, at the junctures of the, you know, sunrise, sunset, and noon. Now, in some parts of the world, at some times of the year, that may be a little difficult. You know, if you're in northern Finland or northern Sweden, you'd either be chanting your Gayatri all day or not at all, depending on what time of the year it was. I remember reading a story, there's Orthodox Jews and Muslims also have prayers they say at different times, at specific times of the day. And I remember reading about some Orthodox Jews traveling on an airplane, and they were just saying their prayers continuously as the plane kept going into sunrise for hours and hours and hours and hours. So that's a little fanatic. But this concept, right? And if any of you, who's ever been in a Muslim country where you heard the call to prayer? Who's ever heard the call to prayer in a Muslim country? So of their five times for prayer, three of them coincide with our Gayatri times. It's always like that. Oh, Muslim call to prayer, time to chant my Gayatri. But they also have this concept that there's certain times of the day, and particularly I found the noon Gayatri, because during the middle of the day, we're very involved usually in our work, yes? Isn't it like that? And especially if you have a job outside in the world, where you can't say to people, this is my meditation time right now. So it breaks up your day, it reminds you, oh, okay, I'm supposed to meditate on the Lord at this time. And then, of course, we have the seasons. And the different seasons are designed for doing different activities. Planting certain crops, eating certain fruits. According to Ayurveda, that if you eat a fruit grown locally, in season, and tree ripened, it's a rasayana. A rasayana means you immediately digest it. You digest it almost completely without any waste products, and it gives you great strength and vitality. Of course, in the modern society, we've thrown out all these ideas of time. We have electric lights, so we can stay up long past the time that we should go to bed. We fly in food from all over the world, artificially ripen it. I mean, one of the most interesting things about being in Hawaii, you could go at any time of year, any day, and pick a ripe avocado from a tree growing wild. And we have wonderful avocados in Hawaii. Bhakti Marg Swami came there and he had guacamole. He said, what's your recipe? Butter avocados pre-ripened in Hawaii, in your backyard. And that's the recipe. So you go to the farmer's market and you have all the different Hawaiian species of avocado grown locally, you know, grown probably two blocks from the farmer's market. But if you go to the supermarkets, what do you call them, hypermarkets?
Supermarket.
You call them, oh, that's good, I hate the word hyper. You go to the big supermarket chains and they've imported avocados from Mexico. You're like, what? They imported bananas from Chile and avocados from Mexico. and bananas, and they were, you know, the standard Haas variety, right, and Kavanaugh variety. But so this is our modern society, it's a Renikashiku society. Renikashiku tried to force all the trees and plants to bear at all times of year. And of course, when they do that, they're growing these things for artificial ripening and easy shippability, right? They're not growing them for taste and nutrition. So who knows how much benefit one is getting out of eating these so-called fresh fruits and vegetables from the market. And as soon as you grow stuff yourself and you harvest it yourself, tree ripened, and you eat that, you get completely spoiled, isn't it? You get a tree ripened peach, organically grown right on your own property. Oh my goodness. And after that, you try to buy a peach at the shop and you're like, ugh, what is this? So proper time. So Bhagavatam talks about proper time to conceive a child, right? Aditi had a whole problem because she became very lusty at the wrong time when Lord Shiva was trying to put ghosts into human bodies. And her husband said, not now, just wait a little while. She's like, I can't wait. He's like, well, I'm not going to be very good. And then we see also there's a proper time to die. So working in harmony with Krishna, working in harmony with the universe, working in harmony with nature also means working in harmony with time. To take advantage, Prabhupada says here, a golden opportunity. So we have all the time golden opportunities of time. Like Prahlad Maharaj said, worship Krishna now when you're young. One of the most wonderful things about this community is that you have a school. Srila Prabhupada wanted a school in every community. Unfortunately, we have not done that. We have probably maybe 30 schools in the world, and the majority of them are in India. We have over 10 times the number of students in India in our devotee schools as we have in all the schools all over the world combined. So to take advantage of time, when you're a little kid, study about Krishna. Learn for your livelihood. When you're in the prime of life, get married, have children, have an honest livelihood. When you're in middle age, retire, travel. When you're in old age, prepare for death. Early in the morning, wake up, engage in one sadhana. In the middle of the day, be active, eat your main meal of the day. When it's dark, go to sleep. Grow things according to season. Engage in the Yuga Dharma for this Yuga. Don't imitate the Yuga Dharmas of other Yugas. Work according to time. And meditate on Krishna's time. Meditate on the Astakamila Lila of Krishna. When we're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we can meditate on this Astakamila Lila of Krishna according to Bhaktivinoda. And we can also meditate on Krishna's time as we're going through our day. Shiva Ramaraj talks about this. He said that we're usually asking, okay, what do I need to do now? What's my schedule? What's on my calendar? Well, for people like me who have relatives in all different time zones of the world, so I'm thinking, all right, what's my son doing? What's my grandson doing? What's my daughter doing? What's my friend doing over there? But we should also ask, what's Krishna doing? So what's Krishna doing right now?
Smiling.
Cheater. It's like singing, right?
He's smiling.
He's singing. He's playing his flute. That would be the right answer no matter what time of day I ask you, right? Were you a bad student in school? Were you like a really cheeky kid in school? Well, we already went to the Astakamila, so what's Krishna doing now?
Getting ready for breakfast.
Getting ready for breakfast, or maybe he's milking the cows, and he has a wrestling place with the cowherd boys, so the boys are, you know, little boys like to wrestle, right? The little kids like to wrestle with brother and sister who are wrestling. So Krishna's wrestling and getting all dirty. And then he's going to milk the cows. And the cows, they won't give him milk, give milk to their cows until Krishna milks them. So he comes and he squats down and he puts this golden milk jug between his knees. He's holding it between his knees. And as he's milking the cows in this golden milk jug, Some of the milk drops go on his dhoti and make his dhoti transparent, so you can see his legs through his dhoti. And then he goes in and gets ready for breakfast. He has his bath. Right? Different servants are bathing him. Right? And then it's nice to explain to Vida Bhagavatamrita that Krishna tells Mother Yasoda to leave because some of the servants that are bathing him are actually young girls. Because Mother Yasoda is thinking Krishna's too young to be interested in girls. He's thinking, oh, he's just a little boy. So she doesn't think anything about having young girls bathing. Don't try this to yourselves. You're not Krishna. So when he sends Mother Yasoda away, so Krishna starts teasing the girls. And he says, the way you just painted that decoration on my arm, it's not right. Fix it. Do it again. Or, oh, the way you're drawing me, you just pinched me. Ow! Then Mother Yasoda runs in and she says, what happened? What happened? Did any of you hurt Krishna? And the girls are looking at Krishna like, and Krishna's having his breakfast. And when Krishna's eating breakfast with the coward boys, Mani Mangal says, there's a monkey in the window. And all the coward boys look out the window. And then Mani Mangal takes all the food from his plate and he puts it on the other coward boys' plates. So his plate's empty. And then Mani Soda comes in and he says, I'm ready for dessert. And Krishna takes the food from his plate and he knows what each of the coward boys like. And so he takes from his plate and he gives each of the coward boys what he likes. So that's what Krishna's doing. Of course, there's also the Asakali Lila Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we can remember these, use the different times of the day as they're meant to be used, not try to force something at the wrong time. Just like Hiranyakashipu was trying to force the plants. Not try to force things at the wrong time. Be sensitive to time, that time is a manifestation of Krishna. That even in this world, remember what Krishna is doing with his time. What's Krishna doing? And of course, we can also remember Krishna's pastimes, like if we're just seeing children wrestling, even if it's another time of day. When Krishna's not wrestling, we can remember how Krishna's wrestling. And then if we do that, do our activities in this world for Krishna at our proper times, and at the same time meditate on Krishna's time, then we go beyond the influence of time. Then time cannot affect us in a negative way. It says that for the materialistic person, the rising and the setting of the sun destroy everything that they've done. But that's not true for the devotees. Because what we're doing for Krishna lasts eternally and has eternal benefit beyond the influence of time. Our identity doesn't change. The value of our service doesn't change. Everything that we put into Krishna consciousness is always there. Whereas materially, time takes away eventually everything. So I thought I'm a little bit late. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes? Oh, I should mention that I canceled the afternoon class. I get too many other things on my schedule for today. I apologize. I do plan to give the class tomorrow. Yes?
Thank you very much for your class. This one aspect of time, I remember here at Rajamandal a couple of years ago, was mentioned that Krishna and the cowherd boys and the cows, they travel about 125 kilometers every day.
Whoa.
And I was thinking, how is that possible? Because I know I heard the cows, and you know, to get them across the road, it's a big deal. And the devotee said, well, the dam is like a flower. Like
it opens and closes.
Yeah, so it closes, they jump onto another petal, then it opens, and straight away they're 100 kilometers away.
Well, then you're talking, now you're talking about space rather than time. Yeah. Space is also a material creation. So space doesn't exist in any recognizable form in a spiritual realm. Is it? It's completely different. Even Lord Brahma's assembly hall, it supposedly has 10 dimensions that are constantly changing. I mean, if you want to talk about, that's a different class, spaces. This was the class about time. We have to do that a different day. You have to have this the space class another day. I have an article back to Godhead about space. I do give classes on space, but not this one. Yes,
just
two comments. You were talking about the sense of time. It's also, there's a conversation where Prabhupada was asked about demons. Mm. Are there demons in the spiritual world? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, but there's rumors of demons.
Yes.
So it seems like the time's in the same way as that. It's kind of like there's this idea of it being there, but it's not really there.
Ah, that's very profound. Thank you.
And then the other thing is there's a comment from, because we're talking about time, there's a comment from Anicharya's, I can't remember which one. And he translates Uttara in a little bit. He says Uttara means the womb of Uttara. And Maya means that Krishna was there. So Bhishma was waiting for Krishna to be present before him. That's how he translates Uttara.
That's very nice. Thank you. Thank you very much for adding that. Of course, you could say that Krishna was there for a while. So it's not that Krishna showed up and Bhishma immediately just says, okay, I'm going, Krishna's here. So he was waiting for Krishna to come, yes, and that was the main auspiciousness of the time, more than the movement of the sun. But even with Krishna being there, he was talking about other things. He was talking about Dharma in the world. And there's a shift that happens, which we'll see in tomorrow's verse, which is one of my favorite verses in the whole Bhagavatam. And when he notices this movement of the sun, he makes a shift in what he's talking about and what he's focusing on, what he's meditating. He says, oh, it's time for me to shift. But yes, thank you. That was very enlightening and enlightening. Anybody else? So thank you very much. I think it's time for us to take prasadam. And when we take prasadam, we can meditate about how Krishna is probably also taking prasadam at this time. So Prabhupada ki jai.